Los Angeles. You're now tuned into Slauson Girl Speaks
with award-winning journalist and South Central native, Slauson Girl.
This is a safe space.
Yeah!
Celebrating authentic black expression.
Where Slauson Girl dives deep
into Los Angeles history,
politics, and news.
While discussing culture, race, and identity with carefully curated guests
to keep you open-minded in today's society.
No cap.
Follow Slauson Girl on all social media platforms and stream Slauson Girl Speaks on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
You don't want to miss this.
Welcome to Slauson Girl Speaks. I am your host, Slauson Girl, bringing you world news with a South Central state of mind. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking to LaTanya Ward. She is a South Central LA native and an entrepreneur. She is also a Black woman trying to figure out the best way to bring a social enterprise to the Black community to address some of our most prevalent issues, one of them being mass incarceration and reentry. Tanya wants to help those most affected by gang violence to understand the root causes of the trauma and turmoil that engulfs many lives. As much as Tanya is a resource to her community, she demands respect and attention. Not only because of her mind, but because people know she is not one to play with. And she uses this to her advantage to get things done for the community and to bring peace and solace to her life. Tanya, how are you today?
I'm all right.
Definitely. Well, first and foremost, I want to thank you for your time. I know that we been talking about this for a couple months, or at least a month for sure. Mm-hmm. Had some scheduling, rescheduling, but we happened to do it today. And despite the circumstances, I do appreciate you for coming through. And I just want to say that I'm sorry for your loss. And
thank you.
Definitely. So people in LA know you mostly from growing up, as well as your business, Filthy Rich Banana Pudding. Mm-hmm. You have also been a familiar face at the healing circles that you curated in the community prior to COVID. But for those of us in the community, well, for the people in the community that might not know who you are, who would you say that LaTanya Ward is?
I've thought a lot about that since I haven't had someone giving me a title, since I haven't been working for someone else the past few years. And I would just say that I'm a human capital builder.
Hmm.
So in the healing circles, they call the people who facilitate the circles healers. And I think that's hella pompous and arrogant to say that I'm healing someone else. So I say human capital builder because, a builder, all the pieces are already there, and you, help maybe create a space where those pieces can be put together.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, human capital builder that is focused on people with dark complexions.
Definitely. That's important. So I definitely want to talk to you as somebody from LA that is just really understanding of, many sides of the spectrum, and so one of the things that I know that you're really focused on is, trying to bring resources to the community, a social enterprise, but also focusing on those that have been affected by mass incarceration and things like that, and reentry. Why is that important to you?
Because first of all, it heightens the trauma, it heightens the PTSD and the mental things that we deal with that are the collateral damages of the larger system. It amplifies it.
Hmm.
They say that, well, it's been said, I don't know who said it, but that depression is fed by solitude, and you know, it dies from like interacting with others, basically, you know, community.
Right.
And so jail will have a person be in the most darkest space that you could be. And so that's why it's important for me to uplift that population. And they just so happen by coincidence to be mostly Black. But we know that ain't coincidence at all.
Right, definitely. So, you know, social justice issues and things like that have become, you know, more talked about in our society, which is great. But for people that are not familiar, what are some of the barriers that, you know, outside of like just the trauma and things like that, what are some of the barriers that people who are coming back to society that are trying to get back on their feet to be like a productive member, what are some of the barriers that they're facing that is kind of like contradictory? Like,
it's too many to name. The fact that there are any at all is a contradiction, because it is, you're physically let go to get it, to say that you've done the time for the crime.
Right.
So to be marginalizing people further is, it should be against the very law that had you do the time in the first place.
I agree.
So it's too many to name. It's like hundreds of thousands of things. You can't be on a PTA board. You can't be in a homeowners association. I forget what it's called. You can't, you know, as far as like immediate necessity, or more common necessity, you can't get a lot of jobs.
Right.
I would say most, you know, even with having your record expunged to uplift the Time Done campaign, you know, they talk about sunsetting records. Nipsey was behind that. He did a concert for it, because even when you get your record expunged, people who are hiring you, they could still see big ass black blotches. They might not be able to see what's behind it, but they know your ass did something and they can then have bias against you because of that and not hire you for a job so that you can feed your family that you've been promising when you get home you're going to be able to help as a, you know, productive member of your family. And it's weird that it's taken this long to even get people in positions of power to like cancel marginalization out.
Right. Well, you know, it's basically by design how they want it, you know. Just creative ways to enslave us without physically having the chains on, right? It's just like, damn, these people are
right. But
they sneakily creative.
Put chains on you in jail.
No, definitely.
I know, because I've been. Yeah, they still do that too.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to talk anything about that? You know, like your time in jail. I know for some, I don't want that to be triggering at all. But like, what would you say? Like, you learned the most from your time inside?
How to be manipulative.
In what ways? Just to get what you want?
Well, based on the person, like who else, where you grow or don't grow, like you would still know how to be manipulative, and it would be either in a good way or a bad way. So I'm just being manipulative in a good way.
Okay, definitely. So you mentioned Nipsey and his involvement with the Time Done campaign. And I actually had went to that concert that he had did with them.
I did too.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. So can we talk any at all about the Peace March? Or
yeah.
Okay. So following the passing of Nipsey Hussle, rest in power, rest in peace, there was a collective energy of our Los Angeles gangs to show a sense of unity following his death. And you were involved in that organizing process behind the scenes. Can you share with us what exactly motivated you to see something like that through? And what would you say the community is today from that event, the gang community?
So the part that that I played, I just I'm a gang member, and I had gone to school for community planning and economic development, and you know, learn about developing leadership within like the communities that are suffering all these things, instead of like having to bring people in from outside of the community. Mm-hmm. So I had just been finished with doing an AmeriCorps program for over a year. And it was like the perfect opportunity to exercise some of those things I learned. And like I said, be responsible with my power, like by being a good manipulator.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw on my timeline on Instagram that like the Bloods and the Crips that I follow on Instagram was all saying at the same time, like, damn, this is fucked up. This happened to Nipsey. And, you know, that's rare that you'll get both sides saying something is fucked up about somebody who from one or the other sides. So I just felt like it was a perfect opportunity, woman's intuition. And so I called the person who I was closest to from 60s, because I saw the news over there misinforming people, talking about how, you know, violent it was, when really it's passion and it's just the rising of our consciousness, because, you know, his message is spreading even stronger now because he dead, you know. And so I called AD, the closest 60 to me, and he was like a brother to Nipsey. So I called him because I wanted to get people from multiple hoods over there while the news was right there to get, a different listening for gang members, for them to see that the lies that they be telling about the crime rate with gangs at the time in 2019 was at an all-time low. You know, it was a lot of personal beefs, violence. It, you know, but people from different hoods was actually getting along. But, you know, they lie so they could clear us out and prepare for the Olympics or whatever the fuck they be up to, you know. And so I wanted to, like, you know, magnify that while the media was right there. So I called AD. I told him, hey, I think it's a good time, like, to get Bloods and Crips over there. And he said, no, the homies is sick right now and I'm on the run. The police just kicked my bitch door in. I can't do it. And I told him, well, if they kicked your bitch door in, then you're going to jail. But do you want to go on the good foot or do you want to go like an average Joe? And he said, you right. I want to do it. And he did it. He called Big U and them and his other older homies, Bear Claw and them, and told them, you know, we want to do this. And they said, we 100% with y'all, behind y'all, whatever. And they supported. And my homie who just got killed 2 days ago, he was there. And we had two meetings. And on the third day, it was the march. And the importance of that is that, you know, when you have an idea to do something that you feel like is bigger than you, like, do it. You know, because it could happen. I never imagined not only that the march would happen, but just imagine just having an idea and telling your niggas and then telling them, hey, y'all tell y'all niggas and tell them to tell. And we didn't use social media. And I was adamant on that because the population is on probation and parole. And I didn't want them to meet us there. So I told them, no social media. We're going to see how far our reach really is. And we did that. It was so many people at the second meeting, because the first meeting, I was also adamant on it just being somebody's there. So, of course, it was no girls there, just me. But the second meeting, I was excited to see gangbanging girls, females, and dudes, and just everybody, the active members, you know, and And then we had the march. And what way do I think it has affected now? Contrary to like popular belief, because it's been a lot of killings and shit since the pandemic. I think that it was important because everything started with just a conversation. Overnight, no, it will not just stop. And my aim was never to have a peace treaty, because I'm real specific with the language that I use. I was trying to start a non-aggression agreement. I just wanted to start at the bare, the basic. You know how like Black Lives Matter is like Black Lives Matter. It's like, that's the basic, like not Black lives are, you know, worthy and Black lives should be celebrated. It's just like basic Black Lives Matter. I'm just like basic non-aggression agreement. If a nigga ain't fucking with you, don't fuck with him. You know, because they get turned off if you say peace treaty.
Okay.
So I say just a non-aggression agreement.
So you had mentioned something to me in conversation, which was about being responsible with your power. Can you talk a little bit about what that means? And do you think that that is what you did with the organizing the non-aggressional day on Slauson and Crenshaw following Nipsey's death?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it can mean different. It mean the same thing overall, but it can mean different things, like in the details for different people. Like basically saying, like, use what you got responsibly. I don't give a fuck if that's that. I know niggas like me, they think I'm physically cute. I'm gonna work that to get us to the next level. You know what I'm saying? Not in a sense of like actually adhering to their ass, but yeah, I'm gonna work it for sure. I might do some checking in between them, but I'm gonna work that. I'm gonna work that my brain works. I'm gonna utilize that. You know, I know that people respect me for, you know, the fact that I am in a lot of ways them. You know, like, I'm not above, you know, saying, you know, what my past was. I am the type of person who, you know, I gangbanged. I mean, I don't have to say much else after that. And I gangbanged, you know, at the level that a lot of people say they have, but they did not. Because the truth of the matter is that from the most tough hoods, it's really only about a handful of motherfuckers that's actually getting physically active and doing all the stuff. Like, you know, so I just feel like it's me being responsible and not being scared to tell the truth, not being scared to say the truth is that none of us are this hard. Nobody's this tough. Like, you know, you hear people say like, he ain't even no jail type of dude. It's like, no, nobody, no human body is a jail type of person. It's not a human situation to be in. So we not that tough. We all tired of losing. And, you know, I have people telling me, you know, I'm proud of you. You know, you came a long way, but you know, I ain't really with that. Or I'll fuck with them, but I won't fuck with so-and-so hood because they killed my cousin. And, you know, and I tell them, like, when it's you taking your last breaths on the ground, you going to wish this shit would have went through. You going to be with it then.
Definitely. But,
so I think that shit like that is using whatever leverage I got or say so or my voice, that's being responsible with your power. This podcast is you being responsible with your power.
Thank you. I'm trying. I really am. So, I mean, I guess, you know, it's pretty much answer. You know, that day on Slauson and Crenshaw, it definitely was you being responsible with your power. And thanks. Like, that is a very powerful statement that I think a lot of people need to hear for sure. Like, white people and white supremacy have created the conditions of the hood. You feel me? But I'm trying to be like, well, we have to have a level of responsibility. You feel me? And I'm even saying we, and I'm not, you know, I'm not doing nothing to nobody. So I'm not saying like, you know, like it's a us or them thing, but there has to be a level of responsibility for, like, to stop the killings, I feel like, right. You know? And so I'm just trying to think about how to set that up without making it seem like I'm, like, you know, like, telling, like, Bill Cosby, pull your pants up kind of thing. But I am kind of saying that, but, like, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that, actually.
Just so, like, basically acknowledge that, like,
we need
it is, like, systemic causes, but we can also be at cause in our own lives.
Right, because we got to be conscious of it, mm-hmm. though, you feel me? And that goes back to, like, really understanding, like, what white supremacy is, you know? Mm-hmm. I feel like, wow, like, you know, that was something that I just used to read in, like, the white, like, books in college. So to really hear that and everybody is, like, has basically heard the word, I feel like, of white supremacy is really powerful. But the real context of what that means, I feel like, is really flying over people's heads, mm-hmm. because it's a lot that goes into it. And we feel like it's like the KKK with the, you know, with the robes and stuff. But it's really like how white people control all of the systems, you feel mm-hmm. me? And we can't even really break into these motherfuckers.
I think we can't talk. I don't know what question you would have to ask, but
I was thinking, like, I had wrote right here, like, I had wrote on Instagram the other day that, you know, how come Black Lives Matter except when it's Black on Black genocide? Mm-hmm. And I could say something like, you know, it created a conversation. Honestly, like that, you know, hearing about, what is his name? His first name? Lil Bob?
Daryl.
Okay, just, like, you know, under respect, you know, hood name, but I would like to call him by his name, too. Just hearing the news about Daryl was just, I was like, wow, that's, I was just like, ugh. But that's kind of, like, what really prompted me to say that or whatever, mm-hmm. you know? And then it's just, like, we celebrate in L.A. and Black L.A. this, and here come Hollywood and Leimert Park, but we totally not talking about the killings that's happening. I mean, we are the gang interventionists. Yeah. I'm not saying, you feel me, period. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like, you know, the people that's, like, with the platforms and celebrating and selling us out, like, they not talking about that. It's like, you know.
I think that, I'm not going to say that some conversations are in-house. Because we as Black people are mixed with so many other things. It's like we not all Black, all the way Black. And it's just all these different things, what people identify as or were raised around and just all this shit. But I think that the reason why, and it's the thing that I like about Black Lives Matter, that they are steadfast in not uplifting a conversation about Black violence, because it does allow these motherfuckers to escape them being accountable. You know?
That part.
But the thing about it is, it's tricky. It's a real specific and, like, it's a real weird situation, because the violence that creates the systems that police operate in legally killing us, those violences are what causes the violence that we have on each other. It's not the other way around. You know, we are not violent. People are, the system is not violent with us because we are violent or violent with each other. We are violent because the system has been violent with us.
Yeah.
Physical and otherwise. So, you know, that's why I don't feel the need to talk to others about the Black on Black violence, because it allows them to more easier escape their accountability. I go back and forth with, like, the whole law of attraction thing. I think I told you that about, you know, manifesting and being at cause in our own lives. Sometimes I feel like that's that we say things like that from a privileged place. Not because I don't buy into it, but you tell that, you talk to a motherfucker eating dirt plates in Africa about the movie The Secret and shit. Like, what can, you know, what do they have to work with? You know, and then on into a person here that don't have nothing but their situation to even compare, you know, struggle to. So, you know, and struggling in whatever way. You know, never had a dad or never or shit, I'm an 80s baby, never had your mama, you know, due to other, like I said, systemic violences. So it's like my whole program in Warfo is to not heal people, but literally to create a space where people could introduce themselves to themselves, you know, and think about, you know, how much we have bought into this toughness that was, you know, initially meant to survive, you know, the ending of civil rights movements and shit. Like, we remnants of civil rights movements, and we then totally lost our way because now we so filled with pain and valid ass rage, you know, against each other and the system, against each other, because you actually got people who, them niggas over there didn't really kill my household member, my brother, and, you know, but my, so my system is to bring people back to the root cause of it, not to excuse that somebody killed your brother, but to really get a grip and a hold on that it's not tough to say, yeah, I know about all that black shit, or, you know, that systemic shit. Cause, you know, a lot of people, a lot of black dudes do know, because they didn't spend enough time in jail around enough people that was woke enough to tell them something about it or research themselves. But they'll still say, but fuck all that, fuck them over there, you know? And I want to get to a place where the those of us that are gangsters, the ones that I told you was like that small percentage in the hoods that's actually getting active, get to a point to know that it ain't gangster to say fuck it about something that fuck you over and the people you love that you say you protecting too. It's more gangsterism to look into that and grow that, grow your mind and grow in general. Like, though, it's, we live in an opposite world. Mm-hmm. And so my program is to give people, you know, the space and opportunity to figure that out on their own. My whole program, for the most part, is questions. It ain't me telling nobody nothing. It's questions. And then a motherfucker gonna answer them how they will.
So let's talk more about your plans for the social enterprise. What exactly is that? What are the moving pieces that you need to really establish this in LA? So, yeah.
What are the missing pieces?
Mm-hmm.
The programmatic infrastructure to grow and all of that, money off top, funding. You know, we live in a money motivated system. Like, so of course I need that, and I need that to pay, you know, qualified people to you know, participate in helping me cultivate my curriculum and, you know, other things, you know, to a more effective state. But what I need first and foremost is my target population. So I think that's in large part why I don't have, you know, big funding yet, because I don't really cater to the funders, the language, the posture, the whatever, you know. And but that's cool with me, because I don't mind losing funders. I mind losing my niggas, like, and they ear, you know. That's my focus, because I know it's going to work itself out. It's preordained. But, yeah, I need funding, and I need people who are outside playing ball, so to speak. I need, you know, those of us that are even on the fence about, you know, doing better for our people, but we got a voice in our hood because we are active or whatever, to link up and then pick out, handpick who else is, you know, we should positively try to manipulate to doing better for themselves. Like, so my funding right now I'm trying to get is to take 100 handpicked gang members on a retreat and give like an accelerated version of my program. And, you know, just vibe out with each other. See that we ain't gotta like a motherfucker because of, we don't have to not like a person because of where they mama could pay rent. and just so happened your mama paid rent over here. We done grew up with the same motherfucking roaches, the same smoker aunties and mamas. Like, we got all the same shit, but because of some imaginary thing, you know, we don't like each other. And then it turned into a real thing, like what I mentioned earlier, that now your brother is dead by the hands of those people who live over there and shit. Like, to really get a grip, even the most coldest of warriors come to some conclusion with the other side, because the main goal is to genuinely protect yourself and what you value, your people, your territory, or whatever. And you can't do that if it's just a willy-nilly shootouts. You know, this is not gangsterism. This is just random. And we all know that weirdos is out here. Like, the Yeez is killing G's now. Like, it ain't no order to the shit. You know, so could we get some structure? I'm sure everybody would like to go, you know, to live their life and see their kids grow up, be able to get something to eat from mamas in the 60s without having to send your bitch instead, because you might die for wanting chicken sausage. Like, you know, just weird shit. Like, it's just basic common sense, but, you know, we got to get to the point that those of us who got the common sense ain't the only ones with it no more.
And we will, you know. I'm very just glad to have your voice in LA and just the work that you're doing. And I just know that with the proper, you know, not even, yeah, the funding will come, you feel me? But just even linking up with the right like-minded people, that what you have that's been put inside you to curate for the people, to bring to the people, is what we need for the healing, you know? So I just commend you. And I also want to talk a little bit about your educational background, because I know that the things that you learned in academia is also what you're using as well to bring back to the community. So would you like to talk at all about that?
I went about me going to school for, so I not only went to school for hypnotherapy and community planning and economic development. I felt like the largest piece to my being educated was definitely my experience as a gang member. I feel like all those other things, like, so I went to school just to explain, because it just sounds crazy for somebody, a black gang member, to be saying they went to school to hypnotize people. The reason why I did that is because I wanted to get a firm understanding of, like, how and why we intake information, how we do. And then, you know, I already got the cultural competency to add to that, to, you know, make the pieces come together as far as, like, how a black gang member, like, why would I go and stand on a corner wearing all red, knowing that people wearing all blue is looking for people on that corner wearing all red so they could kill them? You know, like, I learned about theory of mind and how traumas can shape our perception. It can make shit smell different, you know, and just learning about the seven human needs and how, yeah, we'll do that because they done locked us out the whole fucking system. We can't be important nowhere else. So we done created our own motherfucking world where we could be important, and significance is a human need, like fucking food or water, you know? So yeah, I'll risk my life just to be little baby, big so-and-so, you know, from the hood, and be treated as like somebody important, or, you know, that's somebody that's loved. And then connectivity is another of the human needs. You know, it's like, but I just had to come. I feel like it's just me practicing with myself, like decolonizing, like, because we train to not have compassion for black people, like even black people, like we're all trained.
Right.
And so it will make me miss the point when dealing with black people of some truths that I would get with other people. I would understand that people who've been through a bunch of fucked up shit will probably grow up to be socially unhealthy, you know, but then when it's black people, I'm like, oh, but niggas just that way. Like, they just, you know, you don't, it's not an excuse if it's actually a real thing, the cause of it, you know?
Right.
They say you know, we're making excuses for Black people, but it's not that these things really exist, and we got to stop tokenizing. And just because so-and-so made it, that mean anybody could. Yeah, it mean anybody could, but would anybody? What are the odds of that? Why are you even talking about that person? Because it's not common that, you know, it's not common enough, you know, Black excellence and all that shit that helps people to, you know, really punish the other people who didn't, you know, by chance get introduced or exposed to what you got exposed to that, you know, got you where you at, you know, by chance, happenstance, God, whoever, whatever you think it was. But, you know, everybody didn't, everybody ain't able. And us as the quote unquote woke people, especially the woke Black people, I think that the biggest piece to this is patience. And, you know, they'll say, I've tried to work with niggas. I tried to hire them, and then they don't come to work. And, you know, it's like it's a dismissal of all the things that you will know are true that cause behaviors. They make sure we got hella sugar. That caused hella fucking developmental delays and fucking bad behavior. Then the violences that we were talking about earlier, both physical and systemic, i.e. hidden. You know, it's like patience don't got no time on it. It took hundreds of years to get us here. And the web of the effect of it is fucking untraceable. So us woke Black people got to stop feeling like we are radiating at some higher level than people who don't think how we think. Like Malcolm X said, don't condemn those who don't think how you think. You didn't always think how your ass think neither.
Right.
You know, and we got to start being real patient with one another and having that compassion that don't nobody else got for us. You know, and stop being mini replicas of the shit we say we stand against. You know? So, I don't know. I'm like you, I'm trying.
No, that I needed to hear that, you feel me? Because again, going back to the post that I had made on Instagram, you know, like, why does Black on Black crime, no, why do Black lives matter except when it's Black on Black crime? Not saying, you know, not to be dismissive of the work that people in the inner city are doing around gun violence and things like that. But again, I just think that in LA, I want to see those works amplified more. You know what I'm saying? Like the media the media should, I guess that's me too, put, you know, more focus on that. But also I would like to see just kind of like the same level of outrage when any Black life is lost in LA, especially because so many Black men have lost their lives in LA. So I'm just wondering, like, will it ever end, you know? But again, like, also understanding, again, like, you know, the conditioning and the reasons why people, Black people, operate within this dynamic. But again, like, I wonder, like, is it, I feel like it can stop, but I feel like one of the biggest issues is, and this is not to be victim blaming, but again, like, us as Black people being more conscious in the ways that we operate every day within the dynamics of white supremacy, specifically, like, the music. I feel like our culture that we is mainstream, that we've come to celebrate, is like, you know, not to be dismissive of the artists that are great in the Black community. But again, they don't get as much marketing and promotion as, you know, these other artists that are just promoting death and destruction. And I feel like that piggybacks into the inner city, right? And then these artists, they don't live in these communities, but it's like this
anymore, right?
It's like this circle, like, they kind of, you know, and then it perpetuates into the prison industrial complex, and then you know, these corporations are, like, you know, fueling these rappers. And, you know, when we talk about white supremacy, again, it's not the KKK, it's like the people that own all of the major industries that we as Black people are trying to break into because we need money. You know, but these people know we need money, and they're exploiting us. And we play into it, whether consciously, unconsciously, because the money. But I feel like that's a major issue. Do you feel like at all that the music plays a role into, like, the continuance of the violence in the inner city?
Yeah. So in my curriculum, like I said, I went to school for to be a hypnotherapist so that I could learn like how people receive information and like what could be done with that. I'm not even gonna say what they do with it because it's no way to really gauge like what a human is going to do. But in that, I learned what hypnosis was. So people who don't know what hypnosis is, they usually think it's like what they've seen on TV, which is stage hypnosis, where you see a motherfucker having people clucking like a chicken or, you know, shit, that's stage hypnosis.
Okay.
So, you know, hypnotherapy is not that. It's somebody talking to you about where they feel like they pauses are or stops in life and, you know, what they feel like they need to work on. Oh, somebody did this when I was little, or, oh, this happened. And, you know, just learning, talking to somebody about that. And then you tell them what you think subconsciously you need to change in your belief system. And then they get you to a hypnotic state and they tell your subconscious mind what your conscious mind told them to tell you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so that's why I like it, because it ain't nobody else. And hypnotherapy is not being in like this crazed out of its state. If you itch, you'll scratch. It ain't like stage hypnosis.
Okay.
But in learning that, I learned that you don't get somebody to a relaxed state to hypnotize them, right? You get someone to a hypersuggestible state, meaning, look here, I know you hear the noises, drown it out. You just listen to my voice. Feel the chair on your back, the back of your legs. You know, shit like that. They tap it into all your senses, right? Mm-hmm. Hearing, smell, whatever the hypnotherapist bring up. And we think that that's not a big deal for me to look there and pay attention to what I hear and feel what's on me. But to your brain, it's a overload. So then it puts you in a hypersuggestible state. So at the top of your brain, like what we talking to each other with now, that's like only 12%. This is finna make sense in a minute. That's about 12%. Then in the middle, at something that develops at about 0 to 8, because before you're 8 years old, we take everything in as absolute truth. This is how somebody could make you believe that it's a fucking Santa Claus or a tooth fairy, or, you know, or your daddy could make you believe he really gonna pull up on the weekend, you know, like whatever. Mm-hmm. But at about 8, you develop something called critical mind. And that is like, just for picture purposes, under the 12% of your conscious mind, which is, like I said, what I'm talking to you with. That's where our willpower is. Oh, I'm finna start working out. But down at the bottom is the 80-something%, right? That's your subconscious mind. And that's what really rules us. That's where our fears are. That's why we rule by our fears. Not led by them, ruled by them motherfuckers, you know? And it's where we made decisions at about ourselves, what that is, who that is, that this is a good thing. It's why, even though our willpower is up here and we said we finna start working out, down here, it's our knowns. We know that we don't like sweating, but we do like ice cream. So that's why, you know, if you don't work with down here, you might stop working out and stay fat. You feel me? But going into what you were talking about, the reason why that was important is because when they say, look here, feel this, listen to my voice, your conscious mind gets overloaded, because usually when you're talking to somebody, it go in your conscious mind, and then your conscious mind say, okay, critical mind, go down there and check for me if that's one of our knowns. Mm-hmm. This is why people still operate like a kid as an adult. But when somebody is when somebody gets you to a hypersuggestible state, telling you look here, feel here, and all of that, then your conscious mind don't got time to do that, and it goes straight past the conscious and your critical mind and straight to your subconscious. So now you're in a hypnotic state. But guess what? Niggas is always in an anxious state, right? So we always hypersuggestible. So we living through rap songs. You know, it's not just that them people come from our community and they talking all this hot shit, because most of them do in the beginning of their lives live in the communities, right? Mm-hmm. But once they make all that money, they don't got to live over there no more, like you said. But they still saying that. And we listening to it, and we hyper-suggestible. So we in a hypnotic state listening to that shit. On top of that, we trying to be somebody important because we can't be important nobody nowhere else. And a way to be important where we come from is through what we've been taught in America, made in America, violence, right? So now we in a hypnotic state, just violent as fuck. Because like I said, they do get exposed in jail, you know, to higher education and knowing, but they still be like, fuck that. That's that hypnotic state. It's like, fuck that. This is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But you see a lot of people in jail break free of that. You see niggas make fun of niggas like, oh, this nigga Muslim now. Right. Like, yeah, because he fasting from a bunch of shit by being in jail, and it ain't kicked in. You know, you raise your consciousness. But yeah, for the we in here, yeah, music hypnotizes us. And so it's important that a nigga is saying something decent. That's why I fuck with that nigga Toby Nwigwe. Like, yes, please come through, all y'all. Kendrick Lamar, come through. Like, right. Yeah, it's going to happen, though. It's preordained. It is going to happen that we gonna eventually elevate.
Definitely. You think, well, I mean, like, I know that, you know, people have a lot of different beliefs and things like that, you know. And, but I do believe that, like, I believe Jesus walked. I believe Black Jesus did walk this earth. And he's seen some fuck shit going on. Excuse my language. Sorry, Jesus. You know what I'm saying? I believe
the story. I don't know why you're saying sorry to Jesus, because you got to know that Jesus was a gangster or they wouldn't have killed him like that.
That's what I'm saying. Respectfully, Jesus. Right. But, like, you know, just because in terms of, I like history, you feel me? So it's kind of like if you trace, like, history, you feel me? And then they kind of, like, then kind of marked history kind of around, like, you know, before Christ, after Christ, things like that, whatever. So the further that I went back in history, I was like, oh, wow, this actually seems like a situation that might have kind of been real, you know? So from within that context, and just some other things, just from my own personal life and just knowing that, like, there's no way. I just know that there has to be, you know, I digress respectfully. But do you think that God will rise?
Yeah, I don't think that God is not already risen. I don't have Christian beliefs, just keeping it real. I won't. Digress. I won't ever get in so much into any title that I am a community organizer or anything that I, you know, I'm walking around on eggshells and shit. Can't get shit done doing that.
Okay.
Like, if you believe something, you believe it. That don't mean you can't coexist with other people. But I don't have Christian beliefs, but I don't think that God has ever fallen to have to rise, to be totally honest. I think that the beautiful thing about God, the beautiful thing is that we ain't in charge and that God is that we have free will. So at our own timing, you know, whoever is seeking the truth, they will find it. That's God rising right there. Like, but it's already there. Like, you just got to, like, reach out and grab it. Like, you don't even got to chase it or nothing. Like, it's readily available. But I don't I couldn't believe in a God that could fall, because then that wouldn't be God. Like, that would be like.
Is that I be hoping, just with so much turmoil in the world, basically, I'd be like, damn, somebody come back and just help us out. Like, you know, just set this shit straight. Like, it's a lot going on. And I don't know.
You that, though. We that. I'm that. We don't need nobody to come back. We here.
It's a lot, though.
Yeah, it is. It ain't going to be one or two or three people, you know?
Right. What do you think that Black LA needs the most? South Central, I'll say.
It needs people to put the same, to come with the same vigor that was behind creating these situations, behind the opposite, behind healing initiatives. That are led by motherfuckers who look like and come from the place that the people who need to be healed come from. It's going to look like putting hella resources and money, like they put behind punitive methods like policing and punishment and private prisons and all of that shit behind family reunification, therapies, opportunities like jobs, like not shutting people out because mm-hmm. they've been to jail, but maybe opening more spaces up. It's going to look like affirmative action
around this motherfucker, with, right?
like injected with steroids, though. And it's just going to look like people putting the same energy behind healing the situation that they put behind causing this motherfucker.
Do you think that we can look to the city for that? Or do you think that that has to be like more Black people with resources, really, like, you know, kind of like intercommunal? Do you think that we can really expect anything from the city of LA to help out?
I think it's everything. I don't think we should look to them. I think we should press them.
Hmm.
The county, I think we should press all of them. Like, I can't say exactly what that press is. I don't claim to have all the answers. I feel like it looked like everything. It looked like voting for people who believe in that. It looked like, even though I don't have a whole lot of faith all the time in voting, I go up and down with that, being that, listen, like, we are still a very low percentage of what would give you any type of power, which is wealth. But if that's what you feel, I feel like we should do all of that. We should protest. We should loot. We should vote. We should boycott. We should do everything.
Mm-hmm.
We should just speak up. We should do all of it. I don't know. You know, that's why I was saying, like, we don't need nobody to come back. It's us. Like, we here now. First of all, people coming back, they wouldn't even, if somebody did, let's just say, come back from the dead, or it's like, they won't know. They ain't been here. Like, we know how we need to figure out this operation and get shit bragging.
Hmm. That part. So it really is just like elevating the consciousness of the people. I think that once that, you know, is where it needs to be, then we can get the wheels turning within our
healing to have people calibrate to that point.
Hmm.
I know it's probably hard for you to not critique yourself a lot because people are constantly doing it and you didn't exercise the muscle of like editing shit, period. But don't work on that. Don't let these motherfuckers or have you say, because then you're gonna wind up just like any and every other journalist trying to cater to people instead of tell the truth.
Right. No, I feel like I'm pretty steadfast in, like, you know, what it is that I want to say and believe. However, like, yeah, you know, I had that situation with the,
And some people with the tacos, yeah, or some shit.
Yeah, the taco. Mm-hmm. It's a white-owned publication. I don't know. Anyways, you know how white people do.
I know how non-Black people do.
Okay, speak on it. But, they all band together at the end of the day. But anyways, mm-hmm. It's not even that. It's the, I don't even want to talk about this, but you know what? I do need to do a whole podcast about that, because a year, it's about to be a year.
Because then, right before I did the Nipsey March, I had called out the people at CD Tech in that program that was training me to be the leadership that we need in our communities. Mm-hmm. It's a brown, objectified organization that say they with some Black and brown shit, but they really is, you know, they put the brown in the forefront and then maybe the Black. But they in there doing all type of work, getting funding for Black and brown, you know, to build up Black and brown people. And in there talking about all type of Black issues, and it ain't nothing but brown people in there doing it. And so I called them out on it. They fired me, but I was an intern, so I wasn't protected by no employee laws. They let everybody come back to work. I had like 26 of my other brown employees, the other people doing the program, standing in solidarity with me, not going back to work. And they let all them go back to work, but not me and the other Black person who was complaining. They fired me in March, like the first week of March. And then Nipsey got killed on March 31st. And then they was looking at me on TV and shit, wishing that they could take credit for having taught me all that shit, but they couldn't because they had fired me.
What kind of issues were you bringing up?
I was bringing up that it wasn't enough Black participants. and that the issues that they were talking about needed to be talked about with the people who they disproportionately affect, and that if it was equitable, it would be more Black people in the room than Hispanics. You see? And even when y'all, I told them, even when y'all talking about immigration, the truth of the matter is that there are more Black countries, so that's also a Black issue, more than it's even a Hispanic issue. So they don't like that, though. You know, when you, when they start teaching you a shit and you like, oh, that sound
like some shit that's going on right here
with y'all. Some, are y'all the system? Clearly y'all are. And they didn't like that. They don't like being, you know, that's what I was talking about with being woke. Woke people feel like they don't need to have no revisions. They don't need to do no, they don't need to revise and make sure that they not being anti-Black. Just because you know about it don't mean you ain't being it. Mm-hmm. When you think, you know, a telltale sign, the immediate denial of some shit is a telltale sign that it's there. If I tell y'all, I feel like the space is anti-Black, and y'all say, Tanya, we taught you about anti-Blackness. Like, you know, we could never be. We wouldn't be anti-Black. You know, you're not even willing to look into it, knowing that it's a conditioning. But your question earlier about the education, I feel like my education did come from the experience. And I multiplied that by education, but the education just gave me the language, the wording and shit, how to do more critical thinking, not just in a like a crisis situation like niggas is shooting or, you know, but it gave me the language to the shit I've been knowing about my whole life. I ain't never not known what gentrification was or police brutality. Like, I've been seeing it my whole life. Like, I just went and got, you know, better informed on, like, the language, so I can have a conversation with people who don't come from our area about it.
Right. So, was there any follow-up after the firing with... No. So, just so...
We wasn't protected by employee laws because we were interns.
So, just so the people know, what does the acronym stand for of the organization?
CD Tech. I don't, what does CD Tech stand for? That's Community not, Development Technology? I don't fuck them.
That's not through Homeboy Industries, is it?
Nope. They are the people who, I guess I would say, host the Community Planning and Economic Development Program, which is short, which is long for, they call it Complan at Trade Tech. So they put it at Trade Tech. And they also host AmeriCorps programs. So after I graduated from community planning, they were like, you should do Public Allies, this AmeriCorps program. And, you know, and I did it. And from the moment I got there, I was like, it ain't really no Black people in here.
Hmm.
And so, you know, they I complained about it the first year, and or just about them trying to silence me on issues they want you to tame. Like, you know, your Blackness, basically, you know, you can't really talk it too much. You know, the inclusion of Black people is the exclusion of them in their mind. So they felt threatened by that and would be trying to silence me through the whole shit. And then by the second year, they was kind of trying to, like, you know, the thing that they do when you trying push to you be out? The not really push me out because they let me come back, but they try to silence you. They try to, you know, you trying to be the spook who sat by the door, create a way for other Black people to come in, and whole time they got you thinking they do fuck with niggas, but just because they fuck with you, you know, like, no, we fuck with you, Tanya, like, we're gonna, you know, and we're trying to bring Black people in, was telling me shit like, the organizations won't hire the Black people, blaming it on the org. I'm talking about outright out they mouth. Benny Benjamin Torres said the organizations aren't hiring Black people, and I asked them why, like, you know, after some months, and he was like, well, they're saying the capacity isn't there.
What does that mean?
I don't know, because it was a bitch in there who didn't speak no English, straight from Mexico. So I don't know what capacity meant at that level.
Well,
as far as working for a English speaking job, I don't know what, right, what it meant.
Right. Well, definitely want to look into that. Because that's definitely a problematic organization, especially for it to be at Trade Tech, which is, you know, the local community college where a lot of Black people I know, you know, are going to start their educational journey. And it's just bothersome to hear, because I know you share similar issues with, if you want to talk at all about like homeboy industries and kind of just some of the things there. I personally, I'll say, you know, with respect to, you know, Mr. Boyle and the great work that he does with the reentry and formerly incarcerated, just from the outside looking in, it does seem like something that is mostly helping the Latino, Latinx, Latina community, you know? And so just from somebody that has actually kind of worked more with them to kind of hear your experiences, I just thought that it was interesting because, again, just from the outside looking in it, I don't really see the inclusion of Black people represented like that.
So I don't, and I have never worked with homeboys. I have a homegirl named Brandy Parham, the one who was killed at the mansion party.
Rest in peace.
The homegirl a little bit from Trouble. And we were both, when I was interning through Public Allies, I was working over at Project 180 down on Skid Row. It's a forensic treatment facility. I was a case manager, and she was working there too through homeboys. I would tell her, like, man, they only fuck with Hispanic people. They don't really fuck with us, Brandy. And she felt like because they fucked with her, that meant that they, because they fucked with her heavy, that they heavily fucked with Black people. But it's a, like a fine line in that. And it seemed like, you said it seemed like they helped the Latino Latinx population, right? Well, it seemed like that because it is that way. And you know, shout out to them for like creating that, just that model of like that social enterprise, however they landed on that and kind of got that down pat. But yeah, if they talking about mass incarceration and helping that situation, then and being equitable, then again, like, homeboys will actually be helping more Black people than Hispanics. But that ain't the case. They got Black staff and all of that. But, you know, that's another way that kind of convince even them into thinking that they do mess with Black people enough.
Right.
And it's like, you know, but the immediate denial of anything is the telltale sign that it's there. But, yeah. But I don't know. Father Greg Boyle, Jose over there, he dope, Hispanic dude. He really be willing to sit down and go back and forth in these type of conversations with me. And I respect that, you know, and talking to him. But yeah, we were talking in the office, and he said, yeah, I used to think that they only fucked with like East LA Mexicans or Hispanics. I forget which one he used, but he said, but now I see, because he's not off from East LA, and but now he's like one of Father Greg's like right hand dudes. And he said, so, you know, I know you think that they only mess with Hispanics, but I used to think they only mess with certain Hispanics, and now I see they don't. And I told him, yeah, but the difference is, you know, I'm not just thinking that, like, I got proof, like, the walls is filled with bald head Hispanics, bruh. Like, is that helping me to be biased in thinking that Black people ain't as included or welcome here?
Right.
You know, we just got to be mindful as Black people that, like I said, just because certain entities are dealing with our one self or a couple of us, that don't mean that they fucking with niggas, especially when it's an issue that the org is dealing with that disproportionately have to do with us. It should be disproportionate amounts of us up and throughout that motherfucker, equitably, respectfully.
Why do you think it's important for women to lead in our inner cities?
I think that it's important. Well, I'll say that in the realm that I'm in, as far as gangbanging, I think that I actually think that in that realm that men should lead, because just being equitable, it's a disproportionate amount of Black men that gangbang.
Right.
So I think that the Black man should lead in that. But I do think that they should make room for black women even in that, because first of all, a lot of black women gangbang and go to jail and suffer a lot of the things that they suffer. But not only that, I just think that black women in particular have like something that is so necessary and needed in that situation, which is like this certain like level of compassion. And I think that that is the real definition of intelligence, compassion. Mm-hmm. And I think it needs some of that intelligence over there because it's lacking. And that's even those of us who've been through what they've been through. Like, black women literally can't be like raped out of, beat out of, fucked over out of, like, this compassion. Hmm. Like, we literally like will shapeshift to make shit happen, like, because of this level of compassion. And people think it's like, oh, they're so smart or they're so strong, innovative, or they're so, and it's like, nah, nigga, it's just our compassion. Mm-hmm. Like, and we, that's what, you know, we working with. Not that we don't have all those other things. I'm just saying, like, that thing, like, we got that. And also, I think it's important to tell the truth about when, you know, we are leading situations, you know, because we'll be, like, leading behind the scenes, or they'll be, like, utilizing our ideas, or, you know what I'm saying? Amplifying our ideas even sometimes. And I think that it's just to be righteous. Like, we should start uplifting that. And also to galvanize other women into, you know, not taking a back seat all the time or not allowing people to do that. You know, we cheating all of ourselves out of, you know, like the fullness of what we could be having,
right,
by uplifting shit, everybody. But, yeah.
You wear many hats in the community, and one of these hats is the entrepreneurial hat, and people know you in the community from your Filthy Rich banana pudding. So talk to us a little bit about how you got into that particular business and why it's important to you that people in the inner city become involved with, you know, having their own business.
I lean more to like towards like just like financial literacy, or financially developing ourselves on into like all the way into like the economic participation of us, of black people. But I don't really push for people to necessarily be entrepreneurs. I don't think that everyone is an entrepreneur or wants to be or should be. I think that we should lean more towards just learning how to make our money that we do make in general work for us, learning about investing and shit. But how I got into it is because I wasn't making enough money doing social justice work. I had just finished, like I said, graduating from Complan, and then I started the AmeriCorps program that's hosted by CD Tech. I complained about anti-blackness there. They fired me, for lack of a better word, because I wasn't an actual employee. I was interning. And, you know, they would, like, outsource us to different orgs throughout South L.A. But I wasn't making a lot of money, so I was trying to think of what can I do to make money and not go back to federal prison. And I love banana pudding. I had already been making it, and people liked it, and they will, you know, want me to make it. So I said, maybe I can make money off of it. I don't want to do nothing that I didn't like doing, you know? And so I started, and then once they fired me from CD Tech, then I just really started making banana pudding, because I vowed that I would not work for no other org or have them holding my income over my head at the expense of me telling the fucking truth. You know, so I started selling the banana pudding, and look at God, how, I mean, really soon, if not already, I probably make more money than a lot of the people over at CD Tech. You know, because God gonna prepare your motherfucking plate in front of the haters. So, yeah, so not to mention, I've probably already in my few short years done more in social justice than they have too. oddly enough. But that's how I started doing banana pudding. It was just to sustain myself. So while I did the healing circle work and, you know, and now that's paying off more and more too. But I started doing it just to sustain and take care of myself. And it's turned into something bigger. And I love it because it allowed me to stay like interacting with the community. Like that's my favorite corny part about it that I like, you know?
Is the videos people post and shout you out and yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
but like the actual like sale and them talking to me either about the march or just what it is I'm trying to do next or, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or just like wanting to fuck with me, like wanting to interact. I love it.
Definitely. All right, so I got two more questions before we head out of here. You mentioned earlier, but I just wanted to ask you about the law of attraction real quick. You know, you had mentioned the law of attraction earlier, you know, shouts out to that book, The Secret, you feel me? But why do you think, or what is the importance, do you think, that the law of attraction plays in our lives, and how can we use that as a tool in the inner city to, you know, kind of recreate or reimagine things that don't seem to be in our immediate reality?
I think that the first thing that comes to my mind is just the basic like 101 of the law of attraction, or has to do with like the emotions behind a thought, how fast it'll materialize or not, I believe. And also the thinking about what you do want versus what you don't want. I think that we have been in a situation that will have you definitely probably constantly thinking about it, you know, and it ain't good shit. You know, so we are in fight mode a lot. So we think in fight. And I think that once we collectively like, but it's hard not. I feel like this is like from a privileged place, like for people to feel like this, because I was about to say, like, if we thought about what we do want and got to creating more than versus fighting and thinking about and focusing on the things that we don't want no more, you know, then maybe we would be better off. But the truth of the matter is that, yeah, it's like the law of attraction is teaching. I think that, you know, yeah, it's a reality, but you have the power individually and even collectively to create your own reality. But it's like, how do you tell a person that who's physical right now reality is so fucking real that sometimes it bleeds by way of the fucking police or a person who look like me, you know, due to, you know, because of the collateral damages of the system. Like, how do you tell people, you know, it feel almost disrespectful, you know? But I definitely aim to like get to more conversations about the power that we do have to create and manifest, you know, but respectfully so, with a total acknowledgement of, you know, the reality that, like I said, sometimes bleeds.
Mm-hmm. So before we close out, if someone was to hear this podcast and be like, man, like this woman, she's like, you know, I want to help bring whatever vision she has, you know, and help sustain her vision. What are some of the resources and tools that you need, and how can somebody reach out to contact you?
So what I need is, like I said, actual funding, money. I need that money to hire the proper people, the most qualified people that I could think of, and you know, to help me cultivate the curriculum further, already have a curriculum to cultivate that further. Yeah, bring in people to help me actually facilitate that, to pay for retreat spaces, to pay for this annual Letting Go Moving Forward bonfire, to pay for things because they cost. And I'm setting up this week because I just got my federal exemption from the IRS for my nonprofit. It's called WARFOA, W-A-R-F-O-A. WARFO, and it stands for we are responsible for one another.
So
eventually I'll have a way for people to actually, you know, donate and where I could put money in the WARFO bank account. But right now they can contact me at my Instagram, which is powerful as a motherfucker. POWERFUL.AS_A_motherfucker, MUTHAFUCKA.
Period. Do you have any email you like to give to?
Maybe if they don't have Instagram. They can email me at Latanya J Ward, LATANYA JWARD @gmail.com.
Okay, for sure. We have a quick user submitted question before we close out. I'll ask you this real quick. Is there anything else that you want to let the people know that you feel like, you know, maybe we might didn't touch on or just, you know, keep in mind?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. You know what? As far as like what I'll need, I need niggas to like tap in. Like, I'm very regular. Like, I need people to help me handpick these 100 gang members, you know, to take on this retreat. Who do you think is, you know, active enough and has a say-so enough in their hood, but also is, like, on the fence about, you know, like, just doing something better. Like, we need real leaders, like, people who are ready to, like, participate in cultivating other leaders instead of followers, or, you know, so yeah, I need gang members to be tapping in with me, you know, and because they got the human capital that WARFO need to actually be effective. And it's not that I don't have access to some of those, but I can't do it by myself. I don't claim to be able to. I need the support of Black gang members, the support in the sense of, you know, just coming to meetings that in the future I may have, or, you know, and I really press like people who fund me to give me carrot danglers, because I really want to pay them for their time. I don't want to poverty pimp nobody. I constantly talk to, you know, I got two mentors. One name is Mary Sargent, and she's actually a white lady. You know, but I'm into white labor and people sharing with me what they got access to that I didn't have access to. Right. And she know trauma like I can't even explain. Like, and then I got Dr. Cheryl Grills, a Black psychologist over at LMU. And she stay making sure that I am connected to enough money to sustain myself and my project as best as she can. Like, I'm so thankful to her, and I can literally go to her and say, man, Dr. Grills, niggas need money. Like, they ain't going to be coming for free. That ain't what they interested in right now. And she be like, I'll see what I can do. And she give me, you know, gift cards or something for them to tell them to come. And I got gift cards for niggas. Like, pull up, we going to talk and figure out how we could create ambassadors in different areas. And how we could communicate and probably put out some of these fires before they get too big. But it start with her, like, giving me something to work with. Like, I need that. I need people who are willing to, you know what I'm saying? Help me with the carrot danglers. Support. Shit, give me a hug when you see me. This shit ain't easy. Put your mask on and give a nigga a hug.
Right, that part. Okay. Dang, so now I have a piggyback question, because I think this is actually really important. Mentorship, you know, Especially for people that, you know, might not have, even if you have a strong parental unit, like mentors are essential because just, you know, specific fields of work, you know, people might be, pros in or whatever, but like outside of your parents. So mentorship is important, but for those people that definitely don't have that parental guidance, might be also seeking mentorship, you know, for variant reasons. And so, like, how would you, how did you find your mentors? And, like, what advice would you give to people who are seeking mentorship, like, from our community?
I would just make sure that I'm not basing it off of how much money they make. Mm-hmm. And basing it off of, like, richness as far as being decent and good and also successful. You know, success included, but success at, you know, around the board, not just financial. I would pick someone who actually wants to do it. I wouldn't like ever badger anyone to doing that for me. Right. Like, yeah, I think it's very important to have a guide and a mentor. To not have one is kind of like you're saying that, you know, you don't, you almost don't, can't be taught or don't mm-hmm. have that or don't have something to work on. Right. And, you know, it's good to have someone healthily helping you point your blind spots out.
Definitely. Okay. And just in terms of like user submitted questions, and we'll close out. We might have actually touched on this a little bit, but like with Black LA population kind of being, you know, only 8% of the population, which I personally think the reason why it's that low and hasn't increased over the years has a lot to do with the violence. And like, I feel like the Black men that we keep losing that like aren't able to like produce, you know, like, but the question was like, why do you think that with Black people only being 8% of the population in LA, we see violence continuing? But
yeah, first of all, I think they be lying about the level of violence that we do commit. I think that they amplify when it is us and not when it's other people. Mm-hmm. You know, they would have us believing like that it's that all violences are a domestic violence, and we know that. Shit, police officers have, like, one of the highest percentages of domestic violence because them motherfuckers is drunk off their power, and they go home with that shit. Like, so, I don't know, because these motherfuckers lie. That's why. But, and it's not to, you know, just totally be on here oblivious to the fact that Black people do commit crimes, violent crimes. But I think that, I don't know. I got too many things to say. I think that the reason going to like our percentage of the population, like there's so many things I want to say. Like it's not even just due to the murder rate. It's due to definitely the mass incarceration. And then even when, you know, people oftentimes, this is how I got fired from CD Tech, because we were talking about what is our experience with gender, sex, and sexism, and institutionally and personally, I think was the question. And I was telling them that it was different, you know, kind of different for me as a Black person, because just even talking about, you know, gender identification or sexual preferences. And, you know, just all of that, I believe that a lot of Black people are circumstantially gay because, and, you know, it was hard for me to even get past that point because I was like low-key like attacked, like I was being anti-LGBTQ, but it wasn't that. I was talking about the same system. But remember, I said that it's hard for people to have compassion for Black people. So they won't be able to see that you're talking about the system and not the gay or LGBTQ community. I'm talking about a system that creates circumstances that could very well have people choosing, you know, to date the same sex. You talk about low to no quality education, and that's what you base what you're going to be able to work with to make money off of in this system, right? Mm. But then you over-police those people. Like, are y'all doing something? Of course we doing something. We trying to get some motherfucking money.
Right.
Because we can't get it in your system. We don't got high enough education oftentimes. So then, now we crack you. You going to jail. And now we're going to over-sentence you. But period. A lot of this is done, like, during the years of black males, like, sexual prowess, like they're young and strapping young lads, like, and you got them all piled the fuck on top of each other in a jail. So do they gotta secretly be gay? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they be gay because of that, and that affect our population.
Listen,
you know,
speak
so
on it.
Let me tell you something. I'm not gonna say that I'm not mindful of people's feelings, because I do care about, you know, how I affect people with what I say, and whether it could be damaging or harmful to groups of people that I don't even fit. I'm a cisgender black female, you know, and I respect other groups of people's struggle, you know, even if it ain't directly mine, but not at the expense of telling the truth. It might hurt your feelings, but I kind of challenge everybody to really look into, like, how we don't have enough compassion for black people, so much that anything that anybody say about somebody else, when they include black people, though, it's lost in translation. You know, like, I'm not talking about the LGBTQ community trying to turn black men gay. I'm talking about a system that does it. And I don't understand how people could not get that theory when these are the same motherfuckers who injected people with polio and shit and do it and create private prisons and let judges have fucking stake in it, which of course affects the way they'll sentence. Like, how could you not think that they wouldn't put estrogen in the water to effeminate the black community and lead for developmental delays and, like, all of that? Like, how could you think that this sounds so far-fetched, that the system might be trying to, you know, effeminate some people that they did some fucked up shit to so that they don't try to get their lick back? I don't know, you know?
That part. And, you know, I remember, because my journalism was my minor, so I had to, like, I majored in race and gender studies because they had, basically, the university I went to, they was going to get rid of the whole thing, but then they decided to merge it. Mm-hmm. So it was like race and gender studies was like neck to neck, which was cool because I probably wouldn't have, like, got into gender if it wasn't, like, you know, because it wasn't, like, in the hood, that's not really, like, you know.
Intersectionality be irritating me sometimes, though, because blackness be trumping the fuck out of everything, bro.
And they always, I know. But I appreciate, you know, the context or whatever. But I remember that I had to read, you know, you read a lot of, like, these articles and these theories, right? And we had to read this thing one day. But it's like, you know, this thing stuck out in my mind because I still remember it. But it was like this thick thing we had to read, like, you know. And it was talking about how sex and gender is constructed in prison or whatever, you know, and how, like, we don't talk about that, like, you know, and how the system has, you know, created conditions of our men locked away in these cages. And that,
well, what's, I hope you put that part in this interview.
It's going in there for sure, you know. And the sex is something that humans do, you feel me, period. And so, yeah, what this conditions of white supremacy that's also creating, you know, these sexual preferences as well, that, like you said, when they come back on the streets, you feel me, this is, you know, something that they've had to operate within to survive. And also, let's not even talk about men, like, you know, this is not happening to everybody, we know that, of course, but there are men that are sexually abused in prison as well. Like, all of these dynamics that black men are dealing with in prison that don't ever get talked about. Mm-hmm. But now we're like in America celebrating mm-hmm. sexual preferences and identity. And I just feel like the prison situation is definitely not talked about, right?
Mm-hmm. And or just denying that a large percentage of women who are homosexual, just my interactions that are, I'm saying with the openly being gay, I'll say that, have been sexually abused, you know, like usually by a male, and then, you know, no recourse to it most of the time, you know, and they grow up and they are like, when I talk about, you know, being circumstantially gay, like I'm talking about the circumstance, like choosing them, like your life and how you'll spend it. Like, that's an important conversation. Like, we can't get so caught up in our emotions that I didn't choose to be gay, I was born gay, that you can't see what the piece that I'm talking about there also being circumstantial causation.
Right. There's both sides of the spectrum, basically. Like, you know? Right. Yes, indeed. My bad. I don't want to make that an abrupt, but we do got to wrap up soon. But I guess we'll close out like on your note. Like, you know, what do you want people, Black people in LA, to keep in mind?
I just would tell Black people in LA to find your lane of where you can help. That might just be that you can just start smiling at other Black people more, mm-hmm. or saying hi, or not complaining about when Black businesses charge too much, or that their customer service is bad, and, you know, all the things that go on with big corporations also, but we don't complain about. Just do your part, like, really begin to check for your own blind spots and where the fuck you are. We are anti-Black and, you know, separating ourselves in ways. You know, just find your lane for where you could do your part and do it in a way that that assists the Black experience, because I'm trying to kick a big-ass dent in that motherfucker.
I'm with you. I'm trying to do it too. So, you know, whatever I can do to help amplify what you got going on, and basically try to connect to, you know, also like private sector funding as well. You feel me? To kind of like not have to jump through the hoops. Like, where's the Black people with the funding, or even, you know, the white folks? You feel me? Like, you know, you can send money more directly to like people as well. Mm-hmm. Causes that you support. And this is one in L.A., in Black Los Angeles, that you definitely need to support, Miss LaTanya Ward. So, again, LaTanya, thanks again for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
I just knew that it was important for your voice to be on this podcast. And, again, it was powerful. So, thanks. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Powerful as a motherfucker. Be responsible with the power.
Like this episode?
Leave a review and stay up to date on new episodes by subscribing to Sloss and Girl Speaks. And follow Sloss and Girl on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook.